Lisa Moore at Radio Reverb's Brighton Business Show on 97.2 FM, available on DAB Radio and also on podcast at radioreverb.com. So we are back for the Brighton Business Show in May, and yet again, due to where we are right now, we are recording live via Zoom. So of course it's going to sound a little bit different to how it normally sounds. There might be some noises going on in the background, but hey, we are where we are, and it's really important that we get out to talk to all of you and we share with you things that are happening in our local community. So I am joined today by three amazing people. I have Paula, who has joined us from Hello Flamingo, a Brighton-based business. My lovely co-host Helen Packham is here today. She is at home, as most of us are, and has her children in the background. So they might come in and say hi. So you might hear little voices. Just say hi. They're intrigued about what's going on. And I also have the lovely Paul Moore, who is joining us from Winston's Wish, a fantastic charity based in Hove, who are close to my heart, and I'll explain a little bit more about that. And also the lovely Dr. Ali Grimston, who I recorded another interview with earlier this week. So she will also form part of today's Brighton Business Show. So let's crack on. We are still in struggling with difficult times and businesses are changing. But let me introduce Paula from Hello Flamingo. Hello, Paula. You are joining us from your van today. I know there's been a few challenges.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning. Very nice to see you. Let's hope your battery doesn't run out on your phone. So
brilliant. I'm plugged in now, so I'm okay.
Excellent. 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 Plugged in is always good, especially on the radio. Tell me a little bit about Hello Flamingo and a little bit about you and what your business was doing before this pandemic started, Paula.
So Hello Flamingo, we're a design and manufacture company, and we specialise in retail displays. So we do design and manufacture, we do windows, pop-ups, events, photo shoots. So we design everything and then make everything in our workshop in Peacehaven, and we're just in the process of relocating to New Haven. And yeah, we do a lot of woodwork, carpentry, spraying, prop making, polycarbon, a kind of a mix of everything really. So that's what we do. But unfortunately, because of the lockdown, retail stopped, so we have stopped with it. So now we're in the process of doing visors, and we're doing like screen protectors and stuff. So we're kind of trying to work with our clients to come up with solutions for when the stores start to open. And we've also made and donated, I think, almost now 2,500 face shield visors to the hospitals and to, you know, care places and stuff around the Sussex and UK. So yeah, we've been quite busy, even though we haven't had any work on.
So that's really amazing that you worked in manufacturing, and when this whole epidemic pandemic now came about, that you didn't give up. You thought, how can I help our local community?
Yes.
How did that all come about?
Well, my partner, Roo, he was the driving force behind this. So he basically, you know, we were like working out the best, what we could do. And when it very first started, we realised, you know, that the NHS was in crisis and, they were struggling with PPE. And there was a company that's one of our competitors who we work with occasionally up in London. And they had made some visors for Watford Hospital. So they shared the pattern. Mm-hmm. So Rue and I decided to invest some of the business's money. So we funded the first 1,000 masks.
Wow.
And sent them out to Brighton and Nottingham and Sunderland. They went, and then we'd set up a Just Giving page, and we've almost raised £3,000 now through the Just Giving, which has
been amazing.
Yeah. So we've got another 1,000 to make next week. But what we're doing is we've been distributing. So our friend works in intensive care in the hospitals. And we kind of got in touch with her because when you contact the hospitals, they say they don't actually need them. But then when you speak to the people in the departments, they do. So I think Brighton's had about 800 masks. And then we've given some to Harewood's Heath, Nottingham, Sunderland, Lewis, Gosh, I can't think. There's been so many places we sent them to far afield, and we sent some to the ambulance service. I think they've had about 300. So yeah, we're just, you know, contacting people, and equally people are contacting us and saying this is what we, you know, we really needed them, and we've kind of made ours with a slightly better materials than kind of your average. So they're a lot more comfortable. People can wear them all day. They're reusable. They're easily cleanable. So it's not like a throwaway mask. You've got it, but you know, it will last for quite a long time. So we've had a great response and really great feedback, and every, you know, lovely messages from people. So it's just nice to do something really positive. But yeah, my partner Roo, he was the one kind of doing all the research and, you know, pushing it forward and trying. I kind of deal with all the admin side, and he's been running all the production. And yeah, so it's been a definitely a joint effort, but yeah, he's definitely the one that
the
we have to thank
force
for,
behind
to do this.
But that's it's also really good that you say that they can be reused, because I know in the press they're talking about a lot of this PPE that's just, it's used once and then it's thrown away, and that has a huge impact on the environment. So being able to design something, and I guess that's where your background comes in with your creativity and manufacturing, and being able to provide something that can be used in the long term.
Yes, definitely, because it's there are a lot of money to, you know, once you assemble and manufacture, they quite cost a lot of money to make them. If you're making, you can buy really cheap ones, but they are cheap for a reason. They're not very comfy, and you know, we've kind of want to make them so that people can reuse them and have comfort, and they're not just thrown away, because it's also about recycling as well, because once you chuck it in the bin, that's it, of course.
Yeah.
And if you think, if we've made a good couple of thousand, how many more are getting thrown away if they're just a one day use? So it's exciting. And now then, as retail's starting to come back, all of our clients are starting to get in touch with us, because they now start needing to look at things like, you know, till screens and screen dividers and shop fit markers. So it's the work slowly starting to trickle back in, but it's going to be a different work, I think, for a little while. But you know, we've got the facility, so we might as well use the workshop for what it's for.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, because before this, your business was predominantly putting window displays in and design around and that sort of thing. So tell me a little bit more about that, and then how that's leading into, you know, the future of your business.
So we have a team of project managers, and we're very fortunate living in Brighton. We have some amazing freelancers with great skills, so the business is kind of set up like that. So we have permanent project managers, and then the freelancers we use depending on what project, because 1 month we could be doing all carpentry, then the next month we could be doing all, you know, paper flower sculpting and stuff. So we kind of work with our clients to come up with the concepts, and then sometimes they'll give us the design, sometimes we spend time with them doing all the design processes and working out the materials. And you know, then once it's all kind of finalized, then we start doing the making, which is, it's just really nice to kind of see something from an idea to being having it made, and then installing it in a window, you know. So we've done all installs in the UK, we've done installs in Miami and Dubai, so they're the fun ones. We've done some rubbish ones, but they're the nice ones. So we do get to do some nice travel with the jobs. It's the late nights and through the nights,
I'm sure.
Ones. We've had some stonkers doing installs. I think Selfridges is always a tricky one to do. You're still in there at 9 o'clock in the morning. But
oh gosh, have you done? I think we might have lost Paula. The connection has just dipped out. So we were talking to Paula earlier, and one of the things that she was talking about was that her background started in prop manufacturing, and one of the things that she explained to us that was she made this huge banana, and I can't remember how big she said it was now, but it was quite big, and on the end of it was a glitter ball with 30,000 separate pieces of mirror that they put on by hand, which is absolutely incredible. And I know the conversation I had with Paula before she came on this show, when she was talking about the whole masks and everything that they're making, the PPE equipment that they're making for the hospitals, initially, as she's already explained to us, her company were funding these masks, and then people have been giving money through Just Giving. But I know what's been happening recently is that organisations within the Brighton and Hove area have been talking to Paula's company about sponsoring the masks. So what they get out of it is they get their logo put on the masks. So they're raising their brand awareness. It's not about selling. It's about being able to give back to the community. But at the same time, when we all come out of this pandemic, those businesses that have carried on, those businesses that have been seen, those businesses that have been visible are the ones that we're going to remember. They're the ones that we're going to want to work with and we want to grow with. So it was really fascinating when I was talking to Paula and she was explaining to me now that these companies within Brighton and Hove are wanting to sponsor. So they're giving back, but at the same time, they're looking after their whole businesses. So it was fascinating. Now, I think Paula's come back.
I'm back. Yay! Yes. I don't know what happened there. We had a technical
glitch. Oh, it's all good fun, isn't it? On the radio and recording these shows. So I was just talking, Paula, about the banana that you told us about earlier.
Yes. So yeah.
But also about the conversation we had before we put together this interview, where you were telling us about companies that are wanting to sponsor you making these PPE and these masks and things, and the way they're doing it is that you then put their logos on the equipment.
Yeah, so we've had a few clients where they've said they want to donate and they want to do something for us, and what we want them to do is, if that, you know, some of them are contributing quite a large amount of money, so we want them to feel part of what we're doing. So we're putting their logo on the visors so that then they've kind of got recognition that they're part of the donation. So we'll have donated by, so we've had about 5 or 6 companies who've done that now, so that's, you know, it's nice. And what I like is that at the minute, companies like us and, you know, other companies like printers and other companies, we're all pulling together to like help and support each other. So when we first started doing the visors, there's a company in Worthen called Fine Cut, and they did all the first batch of our cutting for free for us, as you know, as their contribution.
Fantastic.
So
yeah,
it has been really great, and we've had a company offer to do free deliveries for us. So it's you know, it's quite amazing how people have pulled together, you know, in these times of crisis. And it's nice to know that people are actually supporting each other. It's a nice feeling to be part of something positive rather than all the negativity that there is
and
at the minute.
It's the collaborations, isn't it? It's the fact that this whole this whole pandemic has brought people together, and it's the companies and the businesses that are saying, well, do you know what? Let's see how we can work together. And maybe in the past they will have looked at it as, you know, your competition, we're not going to do it. And now they're going, well, hang on a minute. We've got this skill, you've got that skill. Let's join together and be able to help the local communities.
Yeah, I definitely think so. And I think then going forward, when we do all come out of this, we're all going to have such good work relationships that we'll want to work together. So there's something that our business couldn't do, like the cutting side of things, that we could then share the work with, you know, say Fine Cut, or equally that, you know, they need some spray painting, which they don't have the facility. So we've already been talking about that. So then we can offer them a service. So we're broadening our kind of supplier base and being more aware of what everyone else can do so that when we do come out of it, we will support the people that have supported us. And I think it's been it's been quite a rewarding, it's a very stressful period for everybody, but it is quite rewarding in the fact that we can be there for each other.
And building those local communities, isn't it? And getting to know the smaller businesses and the more niche businesses within your local community that can help each other and work together.
Yeah, definitely. Because I suppose most of our clients, their head offices are all London based. So, you know, and we do always try and use the smaller independent companies local to us, because we are a small independent company. So it's nice to kind of share the wealth amongst people who, you know, it's going to make a difference to. So to kind of broaden our knowledge of different suppliers down here has been really good, and we'll continue to do that as we kind of get back to some kind of normality.
Some kind of normal, yeah. So now moving forward, looking at the future, obviously things are starting very slowly to open up, and you've kept going throughout this, so you really, really hope that that's going to put you in a good place. What are you focusing on now?
Well, I think we're now kind of in conversations with our clients about, you know, making their stores safe so they can reopen? Because obviously people are going to go shopping, stores want to opening. We need to start, you know, the economy needs to start bringing in some revenue. Otherwise, it's just, you know, it's going to be an awful situation we're all in. So, you know, we're trying to work with our clients to see what's suitable for their stores, what they need in terms of like till screens and screen dividers. And, you know, you're going to need like changing room, you know, social distancing, but we want to do something in a more aesthetically pleasing way rather than just plopping a piece of acrylic on a till counter. We want to do something that kind of, we're not trying to hide it, but you want to bring some kind of aesthetic into the store to like make it something rather than just, right, you need a screen, there it is. So we've been doing development ideas and, you know, coming up with some designs, and a lot of most of my clients have all been furloughed, and all of a sudden this week I'm starting to get emails saying we're coming back next week or we're starting back the following week, and they need to start looking at these things, you know, with the view to start opening in the next month. So hopefully it will pick up. In terms of window displays, I don't really know how long that will take to get back. We're working with Barber to come up with some concepts. So they're a client of ours, which, you know, they do really nice window displays. And so hopefully something will lead from that. And hopefully people haven't had their budgets cut too drastically, because unfortunately in the world of visual merchandise, and when anything seems to go in retail, that's the first area that loses the budget. Which I feel sometimes is a bit of a silly idea, because you want to do something beautiful or exciting to entice people into your store. And if you've just got a printed banner in your window, it's not really like, wow, come in and see what we've got, you know. So I think it's a, I don't know, I personally don't think it's the right thing to do, but I understand that everyone has budgets and they need to kind of adhere to that.
But, you know, actually this is a good opportunity to bring some design and creativity to this whole social distancing. You know, it's not very nice for us. And, you know, when you stand up at a till and there's a big Perspex piece of plastic in front of you, it doesn't feel very nice, does it? But if that's been designed and you've thought about it and you've been creative and you can make it into something that actually is quite funky or fun or interesting, that's going to make the whole experience much nicer for people, isn't it?
Yeah, I hope so. Yeah, I hope it does, because it's, you know, how long have people not been shopping for? I don't think this. My mum and my mother-in-law both itching to go to the shop. So yeah. as I imagine, is most of the country.
So. I think for me, I've been doing the online shopping, scrolling, putting things in the basket, and then leaving without paying. You know, without buying it, because it's, so going forward, is there anything that you really are looking for? I know that you're talking about freelancers in the Brighton and Hove area. Is there anything that you really need right now as a business?
Well, because what happened with us is, we, as I said earlier, we started off in our workshop in P7 and we outgrew it. So after 5 years, we've just we're in the middle of relocating to a brand new purpose-built unit in New Haven, which is huge, which is great. So we can do loads more stuff. But unfortunately, when the lockdown happened, the building was still being carried on. So we're a bit behind on our building work, but it's getting there slowly. It's just taking a bit longer than we planned. But when we are ready, we work with great freelancers. And so we're always on the lookout for people to come and, you know, get in touch with us and say, you know, this is what we do. We use like a lot of carpenters, prop makers, metal workers, sprayers, you know, so it's, you know, hopefully we can kind of build our books with our freelancers. We have a lot of regulars, but then we have, you know, we're always looking for new people, because sometimes we can have a job and we'll have 30 staff in the workshop. So it's, you know, and it's hard to get hold of good freelancers. Yeah. So so if anyone's out there and wants to get in touch, please just get
and
in touch.
What's the best way? Through the website? And the
If you go on our website, then it's got the contact number and email. I check the emails every day. So, yeah, or you just call. But, yeah, just people send their CV in, and then we can, you know, it's a time when people are going to start looking for work. And hopefully, if it kind of goes back to how I'm hoping it will go back to, there will be work. And that's what we kind of want for everyone. You know, our freelancers, without the staff that we have that do the make, and we couldn't do what we do. So we're the brains behind running the business and coming up with the creative, but without the people
they're
to
the
actually
ones that
make
do
it.
The work.
Yeah. So we definitely, Rue and I definitely rely on, you know, we are very we see our businesses, we're all equals, no one's better than anyone else. You know, we couldn't do that without them, they couldn't do that without us, and we've got a lovely team, and everyone really cares for each other, and everyone's very supportive of each other, and that's kind of how we'd like our business to be.
That's fantastic.
So yeah, definitely, if anyone gets in touch, please do.
So it's www.helloflamingo.co.uk. That's the best place to,
yes,
to get in touch.
Yeah, because then all our details, I can have a look at us all and go, no. And yeah, our dog Barry's on there. He's our head of security. I think some of our freelancers only come here to see Barry because they all love him so much.
Well, thank you so much, Paula. I know we lost you in the middle, but we brought you back and we heard about the banana. So that's really good. Really, really lovely to talk to you. I wish you all the very best with your business and what you're doing. I'm sure it will be successful.
Thank you.
I hope that we see you at Radio Reverb again in the future.
Yeah, it would be nice to catch up maybe when we're back and running and you can get a better understanding of what we're doing. Lead up to Christmas is always the best time for us. So yeah, September, October, November is crazy. So yeah, hopefully we're leading up to that now. But yes, it was really nice to be on the show and thank you for taking the time to speak to me. And apologies, Rue can't be with us, but he's demolishing the workshop as we speak.
All right, lovely Paula, you take care and we will see you soon. Thank you.
All right, take care, bye.
So this is Lisa Moore and Helen Packham at the Brighton Business Show for Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, available on DAB Radio and also as the podcast on radioreverb.com. So now I'm going to move on to my second guest, who is the lovely Paul Moore from Winston's Wish. Now, Winston's Wish are based in Hove, but they are also a UK-wide charity, and they specialise in bereavement support for children. Now, I really, really wanted Winston's Wish to come on Radio Reverb because I have some personal experience of working with them. Sadly, my daughter's father died a couple of years ago. We weren't together at the time, so it was quite a tricky situation for me, but also a tricky situation for my girls. And my youngest daughter, Lily, went to Winston's Wish down in Hove and had some fantastic therapy, play therapy, with one of their wonderful staff. So I really, really wanted to invite Winston's Wish to come on the radio today because it's quite poignant at the moment with, you know, with the pandemic. We have obviously, a lot of people in the country are losing family members, and there are going to be a lot of children that are without their fathers, grandfathers, aunts, uncles, mothers, parents. So it's a difficult thing, Paul, isn't it, to talk about bereavement? But thank you so much for coming onto the show today.
That's okay. Thank you for having us.
So I've given a bit of a description about Winston's Wish, but Tell me the history behind Winston's Wish and how they were set up, why they were set up.
Yeah, so Winston's Wish was the UK's first childhood bereavement charity. We've been around for about 28 years now. And our history spans from an incredible woman named Julie Stokes. And Julie at that time was a palliative care nurse. And so day in, day out, she would meet families and they would be going through that devastating process of losing a loved one. And she would see children come into the hospital and had this real urge to be able to help them further, to be able to signpost them somewhere. And the more she looked, the more she realized that actually there was nothing there for them. And so she went on a Winston Churchill fellowship to Canada to look at their bereavement services over there. And as a result, that's where the idea developed. So she came back to the UK and she started Winston's Wish, which is obviously now where the name comes from.
I did wonder where that came from. Yeah,
yeah.
I did wonder.
So a lot of people do think it's a child or a kind of personal story, but actually no, it was because she was only enabled to do that because of the Winston Churchill Fellowship that she was given. So.
Wow, and that's quite poignant at the moment, isn't it? Given that we've just celebrated VE Day and Winston's Wish.
Absolutely.
You know, Winston Churchill's been in the news quite a lot.
Yeah, and you know, his legacy still lives on clearly in terms of the impact that that has had. And we certainly wouldn't be here today without that. Mm. And her kind of vision was about bringing kids together. So it was about helping children to understand that they're not on their own, to reduce that sense of isolation. and to understand that people have been there before, people have gone through it and they've come out the other side. Yeah. And while we can't change what's happened to that child, what we can do is make sure that their future is as bright and as promising as possible because they've had the right intervening help when they needed it.
Yeah.
You know, often we, as adults, we can receive help, but by then sometimes it can be a little bit too late. Whereas we're very passionate about ensuring that we intervene at the right time in that child's life to make sure that they have the best possible chance at that fight for survival in adulthood.
Yeah. And I know that you have a helpline, don't you, that children and adults can phone the helpline.
Yeah, we do indeed. So the helpline is really the primary way in which we support our families now and the professionals who support children, as you rightly pointed out. And that's growing, you know, phenomenally. At the moment, we're seeing calls both from families where there has been a death or there is the expectation of a death as a result of coronavirus, but also from those families who get back in touch because they've already been bereaved and the child is experiencing that sense of isolation. So they're once again thinking about, actually, I'm now cut off from my family, I'm cut off from my friends, my community, my usual support networks.
Yeah.
So where do I go from here? And also that worry and that anxiety about, you know, kids are sponges. Kids accept that, you know, whatever they hear, they interpret in their own way. Mm-hmm. And for us, we're very conscious of that. So while you might not be sitting down with your child and talking about coronavirus, that doesn't stop them from seeing news headlines or seeing that on social media or listening to the radio and hearing those statistics is enough for any child to start to worry about, actually, well, I've already experienced a death in my family. If somebody else was to die, where does that leave me? And so we're seeing a lot of those calls. And also teachers. Teachers are particularly worried at the moment about returning to school and how they're going to support students.
Yeah.
I think teachers are very acutely aware of the fact that there are many children who will face bereavement or will experience grief in some form throughout this time when they're not in school. And school really is that safe haven. So a lot of kids will go back to school looking for that support. And teachers want to prepare themselves now to make sure that actually they're in the best position possible to be able to provide that.
And you're so right, actually, talking about school, because I know for Lily, the combination of the support that she got from school and the support that she got from Winston's Wish, and there was a connection there as well. You know, the teacher spoke to the guy that helped Lily, and that really closed that loop for her.
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, that's so important for us. So a lot of the online resources that we've put in place now is around, you know, how to create policy and procedures on handling a death in the school community. You know, we want consistency. No child should ever go to school and find that actually the support that they're receiving is substandard to another school down the road. All schools should be able to provide the same level of support. And sometimes it is just about that, you know, that moment of taking a step back and saying, actually, what are we doing to prepare for this? And so we've created a whole host of resources for schools, including a new online bereavement training system for teachers, which is completely free of charge. It's, you know, it's what we're here to do. And so that runs teachers through how grief affects children and the importance of communication, planning and preparing, just simple tweaks that they can think about in their lesson plans. So for example, thinking about if there's a death or a bereavement in a book or a textbook that you're using in the school, how do you incorporate that child into the lesson? How do you ensure that actually they're able to participate and still be able to contribute without feeling the kind of negative associations of going through that process again in their minds?
And that's really interesting. And I remember as obviously as a mum, when things would come up or there would be a movie on the telly where, you know, a child has lost their parent or somebody important to them, and I would be thinking, how do I deal with this? What do I say? Do I ignore it? Do I not ignore it? Do I talk about it? And the support from me as the living parent was that so important as well.
Yeah, so absolutely. And you know, I think that it's like you said earlier, it's about closing that loop. It's about ensuring that everybody in that child's life who is responsible for the care of that child at any point are working together as one. And I think Winston's Wish is often the glue that holds those together. Mm-hmm. So it is the support for the child. It is the support for the parents. or the caregivers in that child's life at home, and also the school, social workers, the community around them. Actually, if everybody's going through one funnel, then you can ensure that you're delivering one message, you're providing support in the right way for that child. And I think that's what we're very proud of at the moment.
Yeah, that's really important. And you know, obviously we've talked about the helpline, which is at the moment where we are, that must be the main way that you're able to help people. But you do other things other than just the helpline, don't you?
Yeah, we do. So effectively, the helpline is the gateway to all of our services. So really anybody who receives our support at some point or another will come into contact with that helpline. And what they will do is assess the needs of that child. So the ongoing needs of each individual child is completely different based on, you know, the type of bereavement, when that bereavement happened, their age. And so they will then assess the ongoing needs. And some, you know, for some families, all they need is that reassurance. That call is more than enough to give them that kind of boost to say, actually, what you're doing is absolutely right. You know, here's some key advice. Here's some key hints and tips on conversations that you can have. And we also have a whole host of resources. So for those families that want to go that little bit step further, it might be that they want something on the bookshelf. And, you know, those are resources that we provide free of charge to people who call our helpline.
Great books.
Books and practical activities as well for the child to do at home, you know, to be able to have a memory box and to be able to make that with your parent. And whether you've seen us face to face or not, you can do those things at home with the right resources. And so we're happy to provide those, you know, that's what we want to do. And then, like you rightly pointed out, for some children, depending on where they are and the situation, there is that offer of face-to-face support also occasionally. And that really just helps them to understand actually what it is that's happened to them. You know, what is it that's happened to me? Sometimes it's about reducing the stigma attached to a certain type of death. So particularly in traumatic circumstances where a parent has taken their own life, or there's been a murder involved, you know, those are really gruesome things for anybody to handle or deal with. But for a child in particular to actually help them understand what happened in a way that's suitable for them, and then to walk them through the process of how their life might change, but also give them that reassurance that actually they will get through this, and other people have coped and survived and gone on to have very successful and fulfilling lives. And I think, you know, that's always the ethos of what we do, is that life goes on. You know, this is just the start of a long journey, and it's not a nice journey to tread, and no one would choose it, but actually we all have a journey to tread through life, and if we can be there every step of the way, then that's certainly what we would like to do.
When we're talking about children, and we're talking about children from, you know, the youngest age where they can, well, they can't really understand, but you're talking, when you talk about children, what is the age that you sort of would hand them over to somebody else? Or is there an age that you get to? Because I know teenagers are particularly tricky sometimes to be able to even get them to talk, actually.
And I think, you know, we're very conscious of that. We've been around for 28 years. In that time, you know, the world has changed a huge deal. And the way in which we deliver services has to change. It has to evolve in order to mirror that. So I know recently during the pandemic and during lockdown, when we haven't been able to see some of those children face to face, particularly for those teenagers, they don't want to speak to us on the phone. You know, they don't want to have those conversations, because that's not what we would do in a face-to-face session anyway. We would work with them creatively to play games, to do video games with them, to make them open up in a way that feels authentic to them. So for those, you know, older teenagers, sometimes that's a text conversation with a practitioner. It's the ability to know actually there's someone there at the end of the phone that I can message online, that I can text, that's going to respond to me in a way that feels comfortable to me, that I don't have to sit on my bed, on my phone, which just feels abnormal.
Have this conversation.
A serious conversation. But actually, it could just be a practitioner who checks in to say, you know,
how you doing?
A couple of weeks since we spoke, how are you doing? How are you getting on? And if that opens a conversation, then that's great. They can have that text conversation. And if not, then, you know, that's where that young person's at. But for us, that gives us the reassurance that we're doing all we can to be there when they need us.
Yeah, because I think the teenagers are particularly tricky when it comes to, well, when it comes to anything really. having now got two teenage daughters, yes, I know that it was a very different dealing with my two girls because of the different ages. The younger one, Lily, was very happy with the creativity, with the play therapy, with painting, and we did memory boxes and all those sort of things, and they're still really, really important to her now. But my older daughter was dealing with it in a very different way. It was very shut down, very angry, and that was hard to deal with those situations.
And I think often what we'll do with families who are, you know, have been exactly the same position as you, is to think about actually the impact of those children looking at each other. So, you know, as that younger sibling, you maybe don't understand why your older sibling is angry and is shutting down and is locking themselves away and doesn't want to speak to anybody. And so part of what we'll do is help the family to understand each other, just understand what's happening to you and what your situation is, but actually, why is mum like this? Why is mum dealing with this in a certain way? And why is my older brother dealing with this in such a different way to me? And that really helps, because it helps families to communicate with each other better at a time when really that communication is absolutely vital to ensure that they stay together as one.
Yeah,
and it's so important that they understand each other and understand what each other is going through and not just think about themselves.
Yeah. So the office that you have down in Brighton and Hove, what's the situation with the Hove office at the moment? Is it that people can just phone on the helpline? What's the plan? Maybe you don't know what the plan is going forward, because we're still, you know, in this situation. We don't really know what's going to happen. But can you see how Winston's Wish will maybe evolve? Will this have made a difference to how you deliver services?
Yeah, I absolutely think it will. You know, for us, currently we are still open. So our helpline is still open as normal. And we're providing those virtual kind of support services. So that might mean that we do face conversations with young people like we're doing now over Zoom or over WhatsApp in a way that's comfortable for them. And what we've really seen is actually it enables us to reach more children and young people. So, you know, we're in a unique position where a lot of businesses are struggling to reach their customers or their clients, but actually for us, we're seeing that we're able to reach more children and young people because we don't have that lag in travel and time to be able to get to a child's home or to wait for them to turn up to their appointment. Often what we see is that family life can get in the way. And so even if they've got an appointment at one of our kind of two centres, they will often be missed appointments and people won't turn up. And so you've then got a practitioner who's waiting around without that family to see when they could be supporting somebody else. And, you know, that's life. Life happens and things get in the way of those appointments. But there seems to be a real cut through with technology that means that we're able to get to more people quicker than we have done. Certainly it's helped us. We did, you know, have a small waiting list before this, and we've now been able to eradicate that waiting list completely so that everybody's getting the help that they need. So that's for us, fantastic. There are benefits.
Yeah, that's really amazing, isn't it? Do you have the helpline number off the top of your head that we could?
Of course, yeah. So the helpline is open 9 till 5, Monday to Friday, and that is available on 08088 020021.
Okay, do you want to just say that one more time, just in case somebody's writing it down?
Yeah, so that is Monday to Friday, 9 till 5, and it's on 08088 020021. And all of that information is available, of course, on our website, which is winstonswish.org.
Okay, that's fantastic. Is there anything that Winston's Wish really need a help with at the moment?
Yeah, so I think, you know, we were speaking earlier before this conversation about what the future looks like for Winston's Wish. And I was talking about yesterday, we took a little step back and we were thinking about actually, how do we prepare for what's to come? And this kind of catchphrase evolved, which was that we feel we'll be the front line of tomorrow. So while we're so focused on this front line of today, and rightly so, you know, eradicating the pandemic, the virus, and making sure that we're doing all that we can to get those deaths down, actually, there will be a time when life starts to return to normal. And for our families, that will just be the start of their journey with grief. And so we're really looking to work with businesses and individuals who can partner with us through that journey. So ensuring that those families can continue to receive the help that they need. Yeah. And some of that is financial. You know, we are a charity. Of course, we need those donations. We need businesses to fundraise for us and to get behind us that way. But there are also ways to work with us to use your expertise and your skills. So a prime example of that is the free online training that I mentioned earlier for schools. So that came from a conversation that we had with a company called Learning Nexus, who are absolutely incredible. And they came to us, I think, wanting to do a bake sale. I mean, it was the simplest form of fundraising that you could think of. And from that, we evolved a whole partnership around e-learning technology. So that is what they do in their day-to-day. You know, it's what they're good at. And actually, they said, well, of course we can do that. You know, it's not taking us away from our day job to be able to provide that for you. We launched that on Thursday of last week. On Monday morning of this week, it had been downloaded 810 times by teachers across the country.
Wow.
So
that's amazing.
For them to be able to look back and say, actually, the impact that we've had for teachers who are dealing with, you know, the absolute crux of this pandemic, which is the fact that people will be bereaved and will have to start picking up the pieces of their life, is absolutely phenomenal. You know, and to have that conversation with them was, you know, an organic conversation that we grew in. And those are the kind of conversations that we love to have at Winston's Wish. We're about working with businesses to figure out how we can work together to provide the best support possible.
That's amazing. And I really hope that the schools and the teachers and everybody in the Brighton and Hove area and further out across the East and West Sussex will take the opportunity to have a look at that training. Thank you so much, Paul. It's been a real pleasure to have you on board. I wish Winston's Wish all the very best for the future. I know you're an amazing charity, and so it's really great to have you on. So this is Lisa Moore and Helen Packham for Brighton's Radio Reverb Business Show on 97.2 FM, Brighton Business Show. So we're recording our May Brighton Business Show this year, yet again. I have who's going to talk about what she does, how she can help you in this tricky time that we're still going through, but hopefully it's going to come to an end very soon. So, Ali, it's really lovely to have you here. Thank you so much for being.
Hello, Lisa, and thank you for having me on the show today.
It's all very strange doing this over Zoom and not in the studio, but I think we're all starting to get a bit more used to doing this sort of stuff. So Dr. Ali, you are a GP, but you are also a functional medicine doctor. I wonder if you could perhaps share with us a little bit more about what you do. What is the difference between a GP and a functional medicine doctor?
Okay, so I've been an NHS GP for 20 years now. I first became interested in complementary therapies and how we can heal ourselves, basically. When I was 17 and had a car accident, and I had to struggle with 25 years of chronic back pain all the way through medical school, and I soon found out that the pharmaceutical approach to medicine isn't the whole picture, doesn't give you the whole answer with something like chronic pain. And there are many other situations where it's not necessarily the best route forward. Then I burnt out in 2003-2004 and revisited this in more depth and trained as a functional medicine doctor as part of that process. And I'm also a trained spiritual healer and as well. With functional medicine, what we're doing is we're going to the grassroots of a health problem. So we're looking at what the root cause is of the symptoms that you are dealing with. Of course, you may think that we do that in general practice and in the NHS, and we're so lucky to have the NHS. I can't stress that enough, how lucky we are to have our National Health Service. But it is a more of a conveyor belt medicine. I will be spending time looking at many, many different blood tests, probably 100 different blood tests a day, doing 200 prescriptions a day in the NHS. So, and as you know, in a normal NHS GP situation, we've only got 10 minutes a patient. So it's a very different matter to when we can actually get to the grassroots and look at what the root cause is of someone's symptoms. One example of that would be, for example, if you're struggling with heartburn, for example, the NHS approach would be to give you a proton pump inhibitor like omeprazole. It's a brilliant drug. It really does help relieve the symptoms. And both doctors and patients are hooked into this quick fix mentality. It's wonderful as a doctor to be able to make somebody better, and they are so grateful to you. But the downside of that is we're not looking at why they've got heartburn. Mm-hmm. And by giving people that proton pump inhibitor, we are blocking the acid secretion so much that you then can't absorb your calcium and magnesium properly. And then that will lead to magnesium deficiency, which can give you muscle cramps and migraines, and calcium deficiency, which can lead to osteoporosis in the long run. Meanwhile, what could be causing the heartburn in the first place is actually too low levels of stomach acid, not too high levels. And this isn't something that I learned in medical school or general practice training. This is something that I only discovered through my functional medicine training, where we're looking at what's actually going wrong. And so we're looking at many different layers, peeling off the layers of the onion, if you like. And that's why it's so important that we're looking at the whole person, including managing stress levels when we're trying to help somebody to get better. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it absolutely makes sense. And it's absolutely fascinating, isn't it? It's getting to, as you say, the root cause of what the problem is. And especially where we are right now, you know, dealing with the whole COVID-19 situation. A lot of people are struggling with stress. A lot of people are worried about their anxiety. Right now with their health from you know, a functional medicine point of view and also from a GP point of view.
So it's really important to be looking after your immune system right now. We don't need to worry about viral infections if we are looking after our immune system fully. And that means at a fundamental level, making sure we're eating the right things. And I know people have heard it before that they shouldn't be eating gluten, they shouldn't be eating sugar, and they may or may not believe it. But eating well is fundamental, because what we feed our cells is what allows the cells to keep working, to keep producing the energy they need to, and keep producing those antibodies that help boost our immune system and help keep our immune system in top condition. All the time, our bodies are producing free radicals to attack any viruses or bacteria. And it's important for us to be able to mop those any extra up using antioxidants, but it's also important for that section of our immune system to be working, and we need to have the right vitamins and minerals in our system for that. And this is where right now many of us included, have really increased our support of local businesses such as farm shops, especially those that are able to do deliveries, so that we're eating as healthy and nutritious food as we can. It's really important to be buying your fresh cabbages, your fresh leeks, and to be using those whole foods without labels in order to do your cooking and do your food preparation. In addition, however well we're eating, even if we've got a massive vegetable garden like we have, and that's really productive, even if you're eating as good an organic diet as possible, my research has shown me that we do need to supplement. We do need to take supplements in addition. And the shocking thing is that different supplements have different quality completely. And looking at the way different companies produce their supplements or even decide what ingredients to put into their supplements varies so much from company to company that this is why most people don't experience any difference in their immune system or in their general health and well-being with supplements. It's because they're not getting good enough supplementation. And then as well as that, one of the foundations is managing stress. It's not just managing stress itself, because some stresses we don't have any control over, such as the situation at the moment, which we're just watching day by day, week by week. But it's the way we respond or react to stress. If you can teach yourself to respond to stress in a way that is more supportive of your body, mind, and spirit, then that will help reduce your cortisol release. And that will help with overall hormone balance. And that impacts all aspects of your body. That impacts your thyroid gland. It impacts your energy levels. It impacts your any sex hormone imbalance. It also impacts your insulin and glucose balance, and therefore any weight gain, etc.
Yeah, so you're talking a lot there. I mean, I understand a little bit about hormones because of the backgrounds in fitness that I've got. But a lot of people don't understand hormones and really what they do. And, I know that hormone balance is something that you specialize in, isn't it? It's part of, yeah, what you do, especially for women.
Yeah, absolutely. So my specialist area is hormone balance for women. And that's not just things like menopause, which is my specialist area. I actually use supplements and diet and lifestyle advice and natural hormone therapy to help people through menopause. But I also help people with PMS. I help people with thyroid issues. The thyroid gland in itself is so complex and important. Every cell in our body has receptors for thyroid hormones. Mm-hmm. But it's not in the NHS, in our wonderful conveyor belt NHS that brings health care to everybody, there is no time for the doctors to understand the thyroid as deeply as I do. And there can be issues with converting our T4, which is produced by the thyroid, into the more active T3. So that's another story altogether. But there are so many hormone systems that interact, and ideally our body is in homeostasis, and these different hormone systems are just gloriously supportive of each other. Our body is an amazing thing. All we need to do is support our body in healing itself.
Yeah, and it's finding that balance, isn't it? It's working out. So I've got a couple of questions for you with regards to supplements. You talked about the fact that there are so many different supplements on the market. There are so many companies doing supplements, but I mean, it's difficult for me to ask you what do you think the best supplements are, because I'm sure you'll say it depends on the person. But what are the sort of supplements that people should be thinking about, and what are the things that they're buying?
So the supplements that I work with actually give advanced cellular nutrition. So they are supporting the cells in a way that actually, as well as supporting the cell with its nutrition, it actually helps to protect the cell, and it also helps the cell to renew itself. So it's working at the mitochondrial level and the cell communication level, even within the cell, to support the cell in producing energy and in working optimally. And in order to do that, you know, you often hear of a study, I often hear of somebody saying, oh, I'm taking vitamin E for such and such, or I'm taking vitamin C to support my immune system, or I'm taking vitamin D because I've heard that's good. The truth is that we need to supplement with all of them, because it's like a fine-tuned symphony going on in the body, going on in each cell, whereby we need each vitamin and trace mineral in the right amounts in order for the cell to work optimally. And the company that I work with, that I recommend mainly, actually is involved in the research that helps to determine exactly what supplements are needed for this. So the supplements I take, even the basic one, contains 34 different vitamins and minerals and phytonutrients as well. We know that phytonutrients are really important in helping the body to combat cancer. So there are some phytonutrients found in green tea extract, some found in olives, and some found in grape seed, for example, that really help support things. So one of the things that I do is I actually offer a free consultation just to help people to optimize their own personalized nutritional supplement regime. And that's one of the things that I do to help support people in this.
Yeah, so it's not a one size fits all, is it? It's actually unique to the individual, because, you know, our bodies are unique to us, and, you know, two people in the same room, their bodies are going to be completely different and their needs are going to be different, I guess.
Yeah.
And with regards to, I didn't say the second part of the question when I asked you just now, with regards to managing stress levels, what would you say the top three things that somebody could do to manage their stress in the situation we're in right now?
So one of the most important things for me is breathing. And I know people may have heard it before and they may be tired of hearing it. It's a bit like saying drink more water, drink more filtered water, I mean. But with breathing, if you take deep breaths, like you're taught in yoga, where you're taught to breathe into your abdomen, but even anywhere you are, in any stressful situation, if you just stop and take three deep breaths, and you have to breathe out, you can feel your body feeling heavier, you can feel your muscles calming down and getting less tense. And I recommend people practice breathing like this for a few minutes, five times a day. So when they first wake up in the morning, before every meal, because we can't actually absorb our nutrition properly if we're in a stressed state, because our body's in a fight and flight state rather than a parasympathetic state for absorbing food. And as they go off to sleep at night, then if they're practicing doing it five times a day, it's very easy to bring it on when you're in a stressful situation or when you wake up in the night worrying about the finances or the business or the employees or your boss, you know, all the things that keep us awake at night, or the homeschooling, because that's another thing that's keeping people awake at the moment. But just breathing is the main thing. And I find that when I forget to do the deep breathing, I'm tense and I can feel that I'm tense. And then as soon as I start breathing, I can get off to sleep again pretty quickly.
You so say that, I'm breathing.
Sorry?
And you saying that is making me sit here and think, right, yes, I need to take a deep breath.
Exactly. And it made me pause and stop and do the same. And you may have noticed that my voice came a bit lower,
yeah,
because when we are slightly tense, our voice goes up a bit and you can feel a tension in your neck. And just taking some deep breaths gets you more into the Maggie Thatcher sort of voice, if you know what I mean, where you're more relaxed and putting less strain on your body as you're speaking. And that's particularly important for you, Lisa, in your role as an MC and a radio presenter.
Yes, and it's one of those things that we do forget. I mean, they don't really have to even think about it so much. So I think that's a great tip. Let me know what's next for your business. What have you got planned? How can you help people? How can people get hold of you?
Okay, so my actual in-person clinic is closed at the moment. I work at the Perrymount Clinic in Haywards Heath. But I've always done some degree of online consulting through Zoom. And I have workshops and a series of free webinars planned, focusing on different areas of health. So I have 1-day virtual workshops. And I also have a course that's coming up on menopause, which is going to go a bit more deeper than the 1-day workshop. So the best way to get in touch with me is through my social media links, which you'll find on the page for Radio Reverb. I'm also there on Instagram and Pinterest, and we'll be increasing my presence there in the next few weeks. So one of the things about lockdown, and right near the beginning, my son developed a temperature and a cough, and so we had to isolate for 14 days. One of the things about that has meant that I am more able to focus on getting these things out there rather than juggling too many things. So I find that I get fantastic results with women either in groups or one-to-one using my health coaching element of my functional medicine.
That's fantastic, Ali. You've given us some really great insight into being a GP, being a functional medicine doctor. There seems to be a really good balance in your knowledge, because you can reach people from different angles. And I so appreciate you coming in today and sharing your wisdom and knowledge. Thanks, Ali.